Hello, this is Alberto Grignolo, Deputy Editor of DIA Global Forum, and I'm here with Betsy Fallon, who is the track chair for technology, data, records, and submissions at the 2015 DIA annual meeting here in Washington. And we're having a conversation on this topic to understand what might be the key messages coming out of the sessions in this track. Betsy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. You know, from day one when we looked at the abstracts and we came together and assessed all of them, there was a very clear message about the use and the advanced and innovative use of technology and the means of technology in how it was going to enable the clinical development process, but also how that technology was going to in turn impact the patients. So the technology, whether it be the way the data was collected, the way the patients were expected to report the data, and how that data was going to be handed off from the patient to the site, to the sponsor, and on to the regulator. So the use of technology and the innovative use of technology in what we hear called wearables, how are the technology being advanced so that the patient becomes much more of a contributor and the originator of the data points, as opposed to a paper, a pen to paper diary card. The patient is really the originator of a lot of the data, and the innovative part along our track was the handling of that data that originated with the patient.
Well, clearly you're already mentioning opportunities that come from this use of technology, in many cases wearable technology. What about the challenges in the use of this technology in clinical trials? Anything people are concerned about?
People are concerned. The security of the availability of the technology, because now that data from the patient is available electronically, how is that data accessed? Where is it stored? How is the security around that data managed? That's what we're hearing primarily because of the breaches that we hear in other industries and the
right.
Security and the use of data in an unpleasant way and illegal way. That's the one thing that I hear about with regard to access to that technology and access to that data, where that belongs to the patient.
Are there remedies being suggested by people in this field? Any ways to mitigate these risks and reduce them?
I think we're in a in between the worlds now, because I think what I hear about a lot of it with regard to the documentation, it's still created in paper and still redacted and shared that way. Or there's access to electronic medical records and electronic health records in a controlled format. So there is different workarounds as we get to a clear security model to manage access appropriately.
You mentioned electronic health records. I'm glad you did that because I did want to ask you, what are the lessons learned, if any, at this time in using electronic health records to improve patient outcomes?
The electronic health records are the gold standard in the first step of the data. And as that is moved along the continuum where they become the clinical records and they become the submitted documents for a marketing application for a drug approval, it's wonderful, but at the same time, there's a lot of concern along the way. But the fact that they exist digitally where they did not before gives the researchers a broad opportunity to see something that they may not have seen before.
What is the current understanding of the prevalence of electronic health records across the United States, for example? What is the penetration, if you will, of electronic health records at this point?
They're seen as widely available, but I think the non-standardization from one system to the other is still a challenge. That you can't say we're going to run a screening query or monitor a number of different health record systems and come up with all apples. And I think that's some of the underlying components that really will need to happen in that. How can we look at all the electronic health record systems in a consistent way and use that data?
Isn't there a government-led effort at integrating or standardizing EHRs across the country?
There is, but from what I'm seeing, even as a patient and the mother of patients, those records, even within the organizations, are not even always available to each other. So I think there's still a lot of siloed information. I think the standards will come, but I think there's, right now we're in a period of transition where those records all exist, but they don't all speak the same language. I think it's coming, but I still see in practice that the information is still siloed and not able to be compiled into a consistent message.
It was recently announced that the Partners Healthcare System in Boston has unveiled their new electronic health record system, and my understanding is that it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to design it and implement it. Is this a good model for the rest of the country, or is it a poorly affordable model in the rest of the country?
If one system costs that much, then every system is going to have high price tags. It's just inevitable. I don't know that we should necessarily have that big of an expense. Patients are not going to trust it, because if they're not in that system, they're outside of that system, and they hear that, and I think it's intimidating to a patient to recognize that their records are in a system that costs that much. I think it also brings into the fact that the patients are not necessarily given the access and the ownership of their records. So if they see a huge dollar sign attached to a system, who's paying for that, and how is that investment being recouped? Is that being recouped at the expense of using my medical records for something else? And I think there's a lot of insecurity in patients that they don't necessarily feel as in control of their records. And when they're informed, and I think patients are quickly becoming informed, that they own the records, not necessarily the person, the company, the institution that had collected that record. But I think it's a matter of control and knowledge, and I see that changing.
Do you see communication efforts being designed and rolled out, patient outreach efforts to communicate the role of electronic health records and data privacy issues to help patients understand and possibly feel more comfortable?
I don't think it necessarily is spoken in the language that the patients can understand. When a patient signed off on a HIPAA form, I don't know that they even read it. So, you know, if I look at a HIPAA form, I'm crossing out things because I don't want you doing certain things with my records. But I don't know that the everyday patient who goes to the physician and sees those HIPAA forms, I don't know that they necessarily understand exactly what it means to have that document signed.
A final question relating to social media in particular, and that is, how has the emergence of social media impacted clinical research, either positively or negatively, and healthcare product innovation more generally?
I think social media is a great tool, but I think there are also fractions of the patient population that are very good at it. Certainly if you're talking about the younger population, that's their life. They're totally on board with that. The older population, not so much. So if you're talking about a medical condition in older people, they're not as savvy. Unless there's certain therapeutic areas, if you're talking about oncology, the patient in oncology is typically very well informed, very well educated. So I think there's the start of that, and I think over time, certainly, as the very technology-savvy generation grows, I think that'll take over. But I think in a lot of ways, the older generation is, my mother has no idea. She's a patient, she takes drugs, but she has no idea necessarily how to access and use social media to make it serve her.
Betsy Fallon, thank you very much for being with us, for your very informative comments.
My
pleasure. For the IEA Global Forum, this is Alberto Grignolo.